This is an ABC podcast.
You're listening to Pacific Soul with Melissa Macon on ABC Radio Australia.
We have four major gods. We have Lono, who's the god of peace and agriculture. We have Kanaloa, who's the god of the ocean. We have Ku, which is the god of war. And then we have Kane, who is the god of man or of life. And of course, there's many other lesser gods, demigods, like we find throughout the Pacific. But being that they are who they are and they reside where they reside in their spiritual form, they are believed to be covered with feathers.
Birds are considered sacred in many cultures across the Moana. Hawaiians believed that gods were born covered head to toe in feathers, and that, like birds, they could move between earth and the heavens. So as the descendants of God, delicate, handmade featherwork was used to adorn only the most high-ranking chiefs and nobility as a sign of their mana and their strength. Featherwork in Hawaii has historically been reserved for men, but today the practice is evolving to embrace talented female practitioners who are expanding their community of featherwork artists and breaking boundaries. Exhibiting at the 11th Asia-Pacific Triennial of Contemporary Art in Brisbane, Australia, Kumu Hulu Mele Kahale Puna Chun tells the story of Hina, the feminine goddess of the moon.
Aloha, my name is Mele Kahale Puna Chun, and I am from Honolulu, Oahu, Hawaii, and it's such an honor and a privilege to be here.
It's an honor and a privilege to have you here. I'm looking up at some beautiful, intricate masterpieces of featherwork, and this is your specialty. This is your ancestral knowledge as well on display here at Goma in Queensland. It's also something that wasn't always practiced by women. Can you tell me a little bit about featherwork in Hawaii?
Absolutely. Featherwork is a very sacred art. It's dealing with feathers is sacred because either the feathers came from the forests, which were higher in elevation, an area we called Vau Akua. So being that they reside very high, they're closer to the gods, so they're sacred. And then even with seabirds or other types of birds not from the forest area, they fly in the realm of Akua, so they're sacred. And because of the sacredness of the birds, only men were allowed to work with them. That's why featherwork was men's work, not women's work. Yes. But it's, in today's time, majority of feather workers are women, but I found that men do better quality work than women. They're few in number, but their work is incredible. And so I've been very fortunate to have been born into this work. My tutu, my grandmother, first learned this art back in 1955, and it became a passion of hers, and she began to teach it regularly in the 60s. In the 70s, we had a Hawaiian Renaissance that began, and so she was in the heart of it and was teaching all the time. It became her full-time thing, and the growth and the interest of featherwork was incredible. My mother soon joined her in teaching the work. And so with me growing up with it, I always knew that this was my kuleana. This was my responsibility to make sure that it continues, it thrives. And now my mom and my tutu are gone. So this is my kuleana to make sure that it continues. And it's a wonderful thing. I love it. And to be able to share it outside of Hawaii is even greater, I believe. And always wanting to increase the interest in the knowledge. And I'm happy to speak about it with anyone that's interested. And if I was able to have brought materials I would have been more than happy to share and teach, but unfortunately, because of laws and things...
23 kilos.
Yes.
Oh, and the biodiversity laws too, right. I can imagine.
Right. So I look at birds very differently from the average person, and the birds here in Australia are amazing. And I mean, even something as simple as a bush turkey.
Have you discovered the Australian ibis?
Yes. Around the grounds of the museum, they're all over. And with the black and the white and on the tails, they have a combination, quite a beautiful design. They make fabulous pieces.
They call them bin chickens because they eat all the rubbish.
You know, I noticed that. They eat just about anything. Well, I won't eat them. I just want their feathers.
I think if bin chickens, if the Australian ibis could hear that, I think they'd feel very respected because a lot of people don't appreciate the ibis, but you've said that they've got beautiful feathers. It's a really beautiful connection that you've explained, where it was the proximity to the heavenly realm, to the spiritual realm, that made birds I guess their feathers so important. Could you tell me about the Hawaiian gods and the belief that they were covered in feathers?
Absolutely. So we have four major gods. We have Lono, who's the god of peace and agriculture. We have Kanaloa, who's the god of the ocean. We have Ku, which is the god of war. And then we have Kane, who is the god of man or of life. And, of course, there's many other lesser gods, demigods, like we find throughout the Pacific. But being that they are who they are and they reside where they reside in their spiritual form, they are believed to be covered with feathers. Now, of course, they have human forms, and in their human forms, they're not covered in feathers. And in their other forms, plant forms, bird forms, ocean life forms, they're varied, but it's believed that in their spiritual forms they're covered with feathers. But then likely to that, with our ali'i, with the chiefs and the chiefesses, kings and queens, they too were cloaked like ali'i in feathers. And so that was incredible work, but we were very limited to colors because of the types of birds that we had. So you typically see capes and cloaks in the same colors, yellow, red, black, sometimes a shade of green, on a rare occasion, brown, gray, but it's what was available. But there's one particular color, yellow. When you see yellow, that means higher rank. The more yellow, the higher ranking the person was who wore it, whether it was a lei or a helmet or a cape. Because the yellow feathers came from a black bird, there were only two tufts under each wing of yellow. Four feathers under the tail. And then one of the two black birds had two above on the head. So yellow feathers were very rare. So yeah, when you saw yellow, you knew that was an important person.
That's amazing. Because you know, also there are so many species that are endangered, but endemic, but to have something like that and to recognize that culturally, so significant. What role do feathers play in other ceremonial parts of culture in Hawaii, whether it's funerals or weddings? Do you see people adorned in featherwork, or is it really still something that's reserved for very chiefly families?
In today's time, featherwork is not common, but it is seen more often as a lei worn on the head or as a lei worn around the neck. Funny you asked about funerals, because I do have a piece here which we call a kahili pa'alima, and it's a staff that has feathers on about half of it. There's two different kinds of kahili pa'alima. This one that I am depicting here is a kahili lele. General knowledge, people don't know the difference between the lele and the pa'alima, but the kahili lele was only used at funerals. It was not used at any other time, and it was utilized in a choreographed dance over the body. And there was a particular person, a specific person, that performed this, and when not in use, it was dismantled and put away. And it was only reassembled and used at the next funeral. And so usually it was the ohana, it was the family that had it. Originally, it was only done over ali'i. And today, nobody practices that anymore. But over time, it was adapted and allowed into the common family versus only for ali'i.
You're listening to Pacific Soul with Melissa Macon on ABC Radio Australia.
My guest on Pacific Soul today is Kumu Hulu of the Hawaiian Featherwork, and we are talking about her exhibit on display at the 11th Asia Pacific Triennial of Contemporary Art in Brisbane, Australia. Her very special featherwork focuses on Hina, the goddess of the moon. Mela, you mentioned before that the best featherwork artists are men. Why do you think that is?
That puzzles me. Yeah. It really does. Because generally you think of men as being or having less patience, or not paying as much attention to detail, but they really do. My husband surprised me tremendously because he is the most impatient person on the planet. But my mom gave him an ultimatum when we were dating. She said, "This is what we do in our family. So either you learn or there's the door." And it took him 2 years to complete his first work. But he did it. But it taught him patience. It really did. And, you know, so many men are oftentimes discouraged because they see it as women's work. And so I said, "No, come sit down." And a lot of times they end up falling in love with it. And they love it because it helps them to relax. Mm-hmm. It helps them. It's very therapeutic. Yeah, very, very therapeutic. And most times, a lot of men don't have that opportunity to get to that place. So, and in that place, they find that they not just enjoy it, but they can pay attention to detail, you know. And like, for instance, my husband, he comes up with such great ideas. And in life, generally speaking, he doesn't. But in this art form, he's a different person. So maybe that's something that's common amongst men who do the work. Yeah.
I think of the region broadly, and I just think we were such a fluid people. We had so many intersecting interests, but also there weren't confined gender roles before colonization. Mm-hmm. I think it's so wonderful to hear that your husband got so much out of featherwork by leaning into maybe what might be seen as a vulnerable space or a feminine space,
right.
Because, you know, Hawaii, like Samoa, Fiji, mm-hmm. Also had so much diversity before missionaries arrived. So, yeah, it's beautiful to see this take place within cultural practice.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's so lovely to see your work in real life. But could you please tell our listeners what's on display for the 11th APT Triennial here?
Absolutely. So my work here is, I entitled it Hina, which is the goddess of the moon. And I chose that. I've always wanted to do something to honor Hina for some reason. And it's not through my mo'oku auhau or my genealogy in any form or fashion, but from my memories furthest back, I've always had a connection with Hina. But Hina is not just the goddess of the moon, she's the goddess of femininity as well. So this was the opportunity that I had to put my heart and my soul into honoring her. So I have three kahili ku, which are feather standards. Typically in old Hawaii, kahili stood, in American terms, 30 feet tall. So I'm not sure how tall that would convert. It's
5 times
and 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, this room that we're in here is maybe 20 feet tall, 20 feet high, so 30 feet. So from a distance, they could be seen, and you knew that kahili is there, that means ali'i is there. And you could tell who the ali'i was by the colors or by the design in the kahili, because some ali'i were of such high rank, you had to lay prostrate. Otherwise, you were killed.
Or
you. Uh huh. Yes.
As a show of respect.
Exactly. Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So, in today's time, I have a 10 foot 12 and a 14 foot here. And that's typically the sizes that we do today. But I wanted to show this, but also in honoring Hina. So, the tallest one. This one is to show the sunlight, or the moonlight that shines at night. It, just like how you have sun rays, you get moon rays. So I wanted to depict that.
That's the tallest one that we're looking at. Yes, uh-huh. Which has yellow feathers.
Yes.
Yes, so incredibly important.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And then the 12 foot, it's a spiral with turkey feathers, but I wanted the iridescence in it to show the night rainbow that Hina will provide when it's a misty, rainy night and you get the night rainbow. And then the 10 foot, the shortest of them, this is basically to show the various... the physicality of the moon with the divots, the grooves and such in the surface of the moon, and the dark portions of it as well. And then the kahili pa'alima, or the kahili lele, for ceremonial purposes, but the coloring in there, the beautiful iridescence to, again, honor Hina and the feminine side. The cape, there is a cape which not many people do in Hawaii much, but the interest is growing to make an ahu'ula, as we call it. But the ahu'ula, in honoring Hina, the bottom, they're duck feathers, so they're varied brown and gray. Some are a little striped and spotted, but to show the diversity of Hina. And then the white collar is a crescent, yeah, to represent her. And then, again, to add the femininity, the collar, which I've never seen done ever with any type of a ahu in any part of the world. But I wanted to add, it's a style we call poi poi, where feathers are hand-tied and the feathers... stick outward, so it's a little fluffy.
Okay, so it's nice and fluffy to the touch.
Yeah. But again, it's all the feminine, literally. And then I have four lei that are here, and all four are different styles. So I wanted to show the different styles of lei that we do, but also in representation of Hina. So I have a humupapa, which is the newest style of all, because it's stitched. And prior to foreign contact, we didn't have needles or anything. So this is actually a style of lei that was created by our paniolo or cowboys because they had the birds on the ranches. And after eating the meat, of course, you don't waste anything. So they took the feathers and they created a lei to be worn on their papale, on their hat.
And did they stitch it?
Yes.
Wow.
They did stitch it, but that has crescents of hina, and there actually are 30 on there to represent the phases of the moon. Yeah. And then there's a Mauna Loa style, which is, it's flat, but yet it's not. One part of the lei back to back are flat, and then the other, on the other side of it, the feathers stick out. So we have a combination of kamoi and poi poi, but the flat part is guinea, and it's the white spots. So that's the physical moon. But the red is depicting the night of the red circle around the moon. Yeah. And then I have a kamoi, which is a smooth, round lei. This one, it's Keala o Kamahina, and it is, again, kind of like the humupapa. If you go and you count, literally, there are crescents around. And then, and then Mahealani, the full moon in the center. And so I wanted to do it literally, where you got the size of each crescent as it got larger to the full moon and built. But with feathers, it's a difficult thing, so I did the best that I could.
I love it. I think if very feminine, probably the most feminine thing you could do is create a period tracking app.
Yes, there you go. There you go. Yeah, I didn't think of it. And then the final piece is a poi poi. And this is Mohalu. Mohalu is a specific night, and so it's a round lei, but it depicts that Mohalu crescent because one portion of the lei is darkened with black, and then the rest of it is the natural. Yeah. I'm excited that the museum has acquired this work, so it will stay here, and it is the first of its kind that the museum is acquiring. They don't have any Hawaiian featherwork here at all, which I'm really surprised by, because most museums around, well, not most, many museums around the world have Hawaiian featherwork, mostly antique featherwork, because so many countries with their ships came into Hawaii, and so trading happened or gifting happened, so our works ended up dispersed around the world, but there's nothing here. So I'm very privileged to have that honor of being the first to have my work here at the museum. But I'm also excited to see everything else. I've met some beautiful people here, artists from all over the Pacific, and so I'm excited to see their work. But I encourage everyone to please come. And it's here till April, so you don't have to come tomorrow.
Mahalo to the wonderful Mele Kahelepona Chun, a kumuhulu and expert practitioner in the ancient art of featherwork, who has travelled from her island of Oahu, Hawaii to Brisbane, Australia to exhibit her work. This episode, as always, was produced on the lands of the Yuggera and the Turrbal people.